No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. And I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we're going to continue our ongoing discussion about the middle class that we started a few weeks ago. Before we get started, however, let me introduce my co-host, who used to be a member of the middle class and now feels like she's quickly falling lower and lower every week, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello, Senator Brown, and how are you? And thank you for that uplifting intro.
Well, you know, it's what you've been telling me. It's like, you know, like you, lately you've been talking like soon you won't even be able to see the middle class from where you are. Now
well,
you can still
true.
See them, but yeah.
Well, it's funny because I was with a friend of mine this morning in Douglas, and I, you know, we were talking about, you know, kind of the middle class, and I asked her what she saw herself as. Now, she has a business. She is a single mom. She has a home and two cars, and she views herself as definitely, you know, upper middle class. And I was thinking, because I, you know, I have one car. I don't own a business, and I am in an apartment. And I thought to myself, it's funny because, you know, we both talked about the fact that when you got out, when we were, God, this was ages, maybe in the 80s or whatever, when you came out with a college degree, you just assumed you were going to be middle class and then be able to move forward. This is the first time in my life that I've ever had a situation where I haven't had a job or, you know, looked at getting one. And it's interesting because as I go to look for a job, some of these jobs, it takes a decision of 6 months for these people to hire. And these are good paying jobs right in my field with the level of my experience. And I'm thinking, how does somebody wait 6 months when you've already been waiting a year or, you know, I've been doing different things, right, making some money on the side, but, you know, it's amazing. And so I see myself as I looking at these issues, I'm one of those people that I'm talking about. Because I can see, you know, we always said, remember when we were young, we were living paycheck to paycheck.
Yep.
Well, it definitely feels now like I, you know, I don't have that paycheck. I had money saved up, but I see that that's now money I won't be able to put in my retirement. And I'm banging on the fact that I'm going to get one of these better paying jobs. It's going to help me reverse what I've been doing the past 6 months. But that's if I get a job. And I think, you know, we are now looking at this weekend, most colleges had their graduation. And it's kind of like those college graduates are going out assuming that they're going to be able to get that better paying job. And, you know, we were talking, that's kind of one of the things we wanted to talk about and how it impacts the middle class, because you have to wonder if these students are going to be able to achieve that goal. You know, as I said this to you the other day, and I had to think, no, I must be misquoting, that the college debt now is $1.1 trillion.
That's absolutely amazing.
College debt alone.
And for those of you that are not good at math, that's over $1,000 billion. I mean, it's just an incredible amount. And I don't want to digress here too much, but I need to make one announcement. If you're out there and you have a job for Kathleen, please call in.
How relocate?
It's looking like she may end up in the Brown family basement. We don't want that to happen.
Exactly.
Every time she comes for a visit to Washington, this is the God's honest truth. Every time she comes to a visit in Washington, she stays a little longer. So it's not going to be very long till, you know, she's here for like a couple of years. And then which is fine with my wife. My wife would keep her. You know, wouldn't care in the least. But
just her and I be gang up on you and tell you how
exactly.
Wrong it looks
and
thing.
That's the problem. I don't need two women trying to make a better man out of me. I can barely handle one woman trying to make a better man out of me. So please, if you're out there and you have a decent job, call my friend Kathleen. And yes. You know, just to get on before we get back on the college thing, which we need to talk about. It amazes me because I know you've been looking for a job for a long time and you're very qualified. You have skills. You have a skill set, which I think would be very unusual in Arizona. I don't know if that's part of the problem, but my opinion when you started looking for a job was that it wouldn't be too hard for you because you had a lot of skills from your time in Washington, D.C. and New York and the people that you worked for, politicians and a trade association and been an education activist. I said to myself, it won't be hard for her to find a job because she has these skills which are hard to come by in a place like Arizona, I would imagine. So, but I know it has been for you, and I know you've moved. You've already moved from the small town of Douglas, Arizona, up to the bigger city of Tucson, Arizona, and you're still not having any luck. And my wife, who just left her job and was director of all public school libraries in Washington, D.C., is also looking for a job, and so far not much is happening. So, I mean, to see seriously qualified people with serious job experience having this trouble, I think speaks a lot about the economy. And back to the college thing, it's just amazing. What was that statistic you told me earlier about kids getting out of college in debt and those that aren't in debt being seven times better off?
Yes. One thing was interesting, they did a survey that of this year's graduates, now we're talking 2014, only 11% of them will actually have a job offer in hand. The rest will either be underemployed. Now, this is the 2012 and 2013 graduates have stated they are underemployed or working in jobs that have nothing to do with their college degrees. 11% of the ones graduating now actually know they're going to be working in the area of their, you know, their field. Now, the other thing that was interesting is that the average size of that debt, that college loan debt when they graduate, is $30,000. Now, you know, imagine that in credit card debt alone, right. you know, if you look at, I mean, that is like, you know, you're never going to get out from under it. If it's like you're looking at credit card debt and then you have a mortgage debt, you might have a car payment, you know, car. And then on top of that, you know, college loans. Well, let's say college loans, $30,000. Most people have, let's say low would be $10,000 on your credit cards. You're paying maybe if you buy a car today, it's what, $25,000. And then if you buy a home, you're looking at what, an average of $100,000 for a home? Can you imagine?
God, where do you live?
I know, right?
I mean, you know. But, okay. but that's the thing. And who's going to make money off of these loans? The people that don't need to make money. The bankers that loan this money are the same people that only a few years ago screwed America. And then we pulled them out from their subprime loans and all that other junk. And now the burden for the debt is going to be placed on kids getting out of college. And it's not only the wrong thing to do for college graduates, but it's also stupid. It hurts the economy. These guys don't reinvest in America. They reinvest in wherever they get the most profit. I mean, we were talking about the XL pipeline the other day. you and I on the last show, and we know all the rhetoric about how many jobs it's going to bring to America and all the other stuff it's going to do. And one of the things they keep on touting is the fact that it's going to make us oil independent. Well, that's ridiculous, because the oil is going to be sold at market price at on the world market. So we may have more oil and may be more independent, but that's not going to help us, because if the Saudis, you know, if people in Europe are willing to pay $5 a gallon and we're only willing to pay $4.50, they're going to send the oil to Europe.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, again,
That's right. These oil companies and all this stuff about using, you know, the fracking issue and these pipelines are going to go across the United States, it's not going to help the middle class. And you would think that would be the first thing in making a strong U.S., that they would lower the price of gasoline so that people will, because, you know, I mean, it kills me. I have this craziness. I am doing an hour commute in the morning, an hour commute in the afternoon to pick up my son at school. That has, like, I am going through gas, and I have a Honda, so, you know, I'm getting pretty good mileage. I'm going through, you know, a week about, and it's like, to fill up my car is about $35. So I am spending probably $80 a week. Because I'm making this choice, of course, but it impacts my ability to buy other things. And this is the statistics you were talking about. Those with no student debt have accumulated roughly 9 times as much wealth as those households that have debt of college loans. So that's like a 10,900 versus 1,200. So if you're, but these are college students. So if you've been lucky that you're able to have parents who were able to pay right off, you know, the get-go, pay for your education, or you got scholarships or whatever, and you graduated, you're going to have 9 times as much wealth as that student who had to take $30,000 out in loans. So then you look at this, which is even more of an issue. So, okay, you're a student who graduated, you got your college loan debt, the hole gets deeper for you, because usually student borrowers carry almost twice as much other debt in car loans, credit cards, and mortgages, the borrowers. And the problem is that now if you have college debt, banks are not really willing to give you a mortgage or a loan on a mortgage, because right, they realize now that there aren't the jobs for you to go across to start building that, you know, salary that's going to be able to pay all this off. And that, you know, it's a vicious cycle. The other big issue now is, you know, America has done better with their credit card debt. It's come down, although this year I think they saw an increase in it. But the delinquencies in credit card has gone way down. But with college loans, it has gone up dramatically. And, you know, then there's the issue, too, when you defer your payments. Okay, so you're going to take $30,000 in debt. You graduate. Then you defer it until you get a job. Now you're thinking, well, I'm going to get a job that's going to pay me $40,000. Well, only 11% of those people are getting, of the students who graduate, are actually getting jobs that pay them, you know, that kind of salary. So you're going to have to take a job that maybe you're going to start off at $25,000. So you defer the payment. It's less, but it's just building interest. It's not like it's, you know, you're able to get handle of it. You're just going to make it harder and harder for you to pay it off. And this is a really scary thing. I was going through looking, trying to find examples of students who are going to school. There's two students I want to talk to you about. A 23-year-old dentistry student in New York, right? Did everything he's supposed to. Breezed through the best high school in the country. Is in one now studying dentistry at one of the best dental schools. Can you imagine, you know what his debt will be when he graduates in 2016? $400,000.
That's just amazing. That's just amazing. Now even as much as a doctor or dentist makes, that's just a horrendous debt to strap on somebody going into the job market. And go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish before
and
you get
so
on.
Now he's living at home. He has, and the other big issue is that students who have college debt, they don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel good about their future. They're pessimistic. They don't buy. So they don't go out to happy hour. They don't, they may forego their haircut. They don't go to the doctor. They don't buy things because they're all, they know what this college debt means for them, right? Now, okay. Some of them are actually also being going defaulting on their student loans because think of this. You have a $400,000 school debt. Now you're going to open your practice. That is astronomical these days to open a dental practice. So they can't do both, so they default on their school loan. Now, here's another case of a student making over $40,000 a year. She graduated from Ithaca College in 2012, which is better than most of her friends. But she has $75,000 in loans. It'll take her at least 15 years to pay off her debts. So when she's right now, she's living at home. She may, you know, she has a boyfriend. They're paying, like, she's paying $700 a month on her college loans. It's going to take her 15 years to pay that off. She's going to have to give up her dream of going to culinary school. She definitely cannot. She crossed out the idea of renting her own apartment, so she's living at home. She will be 40. Now, you know, they were talking, these students, about, you know, you don't think it cost, you know, you don't think it's going to cost a lot to buy the small things like makeup or get your hair cut or whatever. She goes, but it all adds up. And now she's just not doing anything. And she says, you know, it's harder and harder because she doesn't have an optimistic outlook of her ever being able to even go into an apartment in the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, you know, that's really the crux of the issue, I think, for the middle class, is that the most marginal thing in the world is money. So every time you get a dollar more, it's a little less important. If you don't have any money, it's very important. If you have a lot of money, it's less and less important. So, you know, people that make $1 million a year, these people, these Walmart people, all these people that are making these exaggerated profits, well, they're not plowing the money back into the economy. You know, when you're out there and you're working for a living and you're making whatever your salary is, $35,000, $45,000, $50,000 a year, you're putting the money right back in the economy. That money is growing. It's going to other people. It's being used. If you're making millions and millions of dollars, well, yeah, maybe you're spending a lot of money, but you're putting a lot of that money in investments in other countries and offshore investments and things that are paying you high interest. You're not putting them back. You're not going down and, you know, if you make $1 million a year, you're not going down to the local store and spending the money. No, you're spending some of it and putting some of it away. So the best thing you can do is have a nice, healthy middle class who does some saving and does some future planning, but also spends money in the economy. And that's really where this consolidation of wealth is hurting all of us in the economy. And I wish these right-wing conservative nuts who are out there pushing this agenda to make the rich richer. I think we need to stand up to them, and I wish we'd do more of that because it's really killing the middle class. Go ahead.
This is one issue that I don't understand why college students and parents are not mobilizing on, because, you know, I mean, universities cost. The tuition is going up. You know, there has to be a balance. You know, I'm looking at, you know, the U of A, and it's like over $20,000 for in-state tuition, $30,000 to $40,000 out of state. That's a state university. So where do you go? I mean, you have to get control. You know, these conservatives talk about controlling the debt in the United States. This is where you start. When kids are going out there to make a living, you've got to control the cost of these loans and making it available for students to be able to recuperate and be able to start being able to have some, what do they call it, discretionary income, where you can actually spend it on things like a car or, you know, a vacation or putting it into your retirement. I guess I just don't get I don't know. And we'd like to hear from the audience. Our number is 888-627-6008. What do you think about this? What will it take to get you off your seat and get involved in something like, you know, and there, if you Google, you can find that there are bills. You know, Elizabeth Warren, we've always talked about right. how she's been a proponent for reducing college debt, and she has a new book out, and her whole thing is the vanishing middle class. This all ties in. It's all one vicious circle, and you have to start being concerned about it. I mean, I think Dr. Miller, who has a show on BBS Radio, had told me that from all the statistics, what it's showing, that in 20 years there will, or 30 years, there will be no middle class. That's scary, folks. Wake up.
Well, when the middle class goes, so goes the economy. You know, I mean, all of us, we're all in this boat together. And I think it's really interesting that you use the word recuperate, because when I got out of college, we used words like, you know, career and you know, more positive things. But I think it is a matter of recuperating. And that's what people think of today. I've got to get out of college, pay my college right. loans, and then I can move on. You know, my daughter said to me, it's funny, she said to me, well, I'll probably move back home after college. And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, well, Dad, you don't get out of college and just go out and get a job. And I'm like, excuse me, but your mother and I are paying a fortune, and this is what I thought it was about. I thought we were getting you a college education so you could get a job. And she looked at me with just this incredulous look on her face and said, well, that's not how it works anymore, Dad. You right. know, so, you know, when you talk about attitude and how this debt and everything depresses kids, young people, that's absolutely true. You know, she's already looking ahead and not saying, I'm going to have a great career. She's going, I'm going to have to go home and recoup and see what my next step is. And that's certainly not what I thought. I left yeah. home on the morning of my 18th birthday, and I never returned. Right. You know, and except to collect my Christmas presents and stuff. But you know, I mean, it's just a different world out there, and it's hurting all of us. I see we have a caller on line one. Let's go to the phones and see what he has to say. Taboo, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you all?
I'm very good.
Can you hear me? You? Great, great. The last thing, I'd like to ask a question and make a couple comments, if it's okay.
Absolutely.
Well, first, Kathleen, I think you all were talking about, the bottom line, I would just say, you know, you can't spend money if you don't have it. You were talking about the economy.
Right.
Part of the problem is the wages are so low, you know, that you just can't spend what you don't have. And we must ask ourselves, then, why are businesses paying such low salaries? It's about, the bottom line is, you know, you're trying to make profits, and it's about supply and demand. As long right. as you got a large supply of workers, you're going to pay low salaries. So the question is, why do we have such surplus of workers? You know, because, right. you know, we have limited number of jobs in any geographical area or in this country. So I guess my question to you would be, then can't you see, the math is very simple. If you got anywhere between 12 to 30 million illegal people in your country, and majority of them are working, that's where the jobs are. That's why you have surplus of labor. That's why you have low salaries. That is why I feel as though the illegal immigration thing is one of the greatest things that's hurting the economy. Our students coming out, as you just mentioned, you all said it so well. You're really expressing mm-hmm. the problems. They can't work because other foreign people, many illegal immigrants, are working it.
Well, you know, right I would along. Take exception with that, Taboo. First of all, America has always been a country of immigrants, and there's always
that's
been a great
point.
Economic
That's not the point. No,
engine.
I don't want to – No,
I mean,
no, that's not the point.
That's not necessarily true for African Americans, as you know. Many of them didn't emigrate. They were brought here against their will. And it's not true, of course, for Native Americans. But for the most part, we've always absorbed great waves of immigration. And second of all, the immigrants that are coming into this country are taking the low paying jobs. They're not taking the middle class jobs. They're taking jobs that are paying a substandard wage. And I mean, and that's the truth of the matter. These are guys cutting your lawn and taking your fast food orders. These aren't people that are lawyers and doctors and skilled labor, which has been the supply of the middle class. So they may be hurting the poor, and I wouldn't argue that fact with you too much, but I don't think they're hurting the middle class.
I would say to go ahead.
I'd like to, for Lucinda Brown, I'd like for us to take a tour. I'd like to go take you through some of the hospitals, the doctors, the engineers, the H-1B visas, the skills, the carpenters, the build. You know, every trade skill that you say we don't have, I'd like to get with you, and I personally, let's do a documentary here in D.C., and I will sure prove you wrong.
Well,
That is interesting, Dubu. But, you know, it's interesting also is that what's happening, I think, too, is that Americans, young Americans who are going to college have an expectation. Like, I have a friend who owned a landscaping business. He said, I used to get college students who would mow the lawn during, you know, summer vacation. He can't find any of those. You know, people have a higher expectation now of what they need and what they want. My son is not going to go for a summer job and pick melons or cantaloupe down in Yuma. He wants a job that's going to pay him at least $20, or he's saying, well, is it worth it? I mean, he's fortunate he has a job in a hospital. But you're right. In Douglas, where I worked in a hospital, our doctors were from overseas because none of the doctors that were graduating from the medical schools, Americans, wanted to come to a small, underserved rural community that didn't have a mall. Their wives or their girlfriends didn't want to move there. That's the only way we were able to get doctors. So part of the problem, too, is the expectation of Americans coming out of college, and this, our youth, is they are not going to even do manual labor to help themselves pay the bills. They just expect to be able to do certain things. And I agree with you. I do think you're right that there is a lot of immigrants, maybe they have visas, maybe they don't, who are in more of the upper mobile kind of jobs. It is definitely a fact because I saw it in Douglas. Now, you know, it's just kind of strange because there's so many issues. It's not a really clear cut, but this is all eating away at our middle class. And it's going to become so huge if we don't do something that we won't be able to do something. We'll just see ourselves spiraling down.
It is already so huge. That is the problem.
Right. It's
jobs
true.
Are being exported, and thank President Obama's doing a great job of trying to get the jobs back. He has an initiative now. He's trying to get people in the business to come back to the country. That's what's needed. That's one of the things that's needed. But by the same token, I feel as though this is a sovereign country. We need to learn to live together as a planet of people. Each country should, you know, take care of its own. We work to help each other. But we must respect each other for our laws. We just can't go in any other country and do what we want. Other people should not be able to just come here.
Right, and we both agree with that. We've done shows on strong border security and you know, that whole issue of making sure that we hold employers to the law. And I would also say that what the sentiments that you're expressing, Taboo, they always get expressed in times of hard economic times. We always talk about protectionism, you know, protecting our own. But historically, I don't think that we've seen that's very helpful economically. You look at the car industry, you know, that was the big, when I was a young man, that was the big thing. Buy American cars. Don't buy those Japanese cars. That really didn't help us very much. And what did those guys do when they had the first opportunity? They shipped all those jobs overseas. They shipped them to Mexico. They shipped them to other countries to make their car parts in rural Ohio and Indiana, which used to make all the car parts for GM cars and Chrysler and other American brands. There's been a terrible economic catastrophe in those areas because all those shops have moved. Now all your car parts are made in Mexico, if it's an American car or some other place in South America or maybe even in Europe rather than the United States. And you know that a manufacturer in China who makes a worker that makes cell phones in China, where all your iPhones and everything else come from these days, gets $2 an hour. They get $2 an hour in China. How are we going to compete with that?
Well, let me tell you something even worse. One second, Tabu. You know, in Douglas or in Isla Prieta, they used to make seatbelts for the American car companies. Those guys, the family of four, let's say, makes $10 a week. A week, you know, making seatbelts for American cars. Now, you know, it seems like unbelievable. That could be a lot of money to those families, but at the same time, they come over here to Douglas to buy milk. But I mean, can you imagine making $10 a week? And that's an honest truth. So, you know, this whole globalism, this whole world market, I think was one of the worst things we ever did, because I do believe that we have to keep the United States strong. I am somewhat of a protectionist. I want us to take care of our problems first. Then whatever we got left over, we can share with the rest. And that might be a very kind of narrow-minded way, but I'm just tired of seeing everything go outside of the United States. And the profit has just become what everyone is worried about, and the worker and the middle class is hurting.
I agree with you. Now, listen, what about Vietnam? They make, 25 cents for what, a day, is it, or an hour? Is it? And this is where they had it. And look at what happened in Switzerland. They just turned down, $25 an hour minimum wage?
When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about there's a worldwide movement going on to raise the minimum wage for fast food workers. And relatively, they make less than they made in 1960s. But in Denmark, they make $21 an hour. And in Australia, they make $15.50 an hour to work in a fast food restaurant. $21 in Denmark. So we're going to talk about that.
They also have a lot of taxes, but they do have a lot of programs. That's true. A lot of social programs.
And you know what? We're all a bit of a protectionist. I want to put forth legislation to keep Kathleen in Arizona. I want to protect my house, and I'm going to put forth a bill called the Kathleen Gomez Stay in the Southwest Amendment to the Constitution. But seriously, I think we all want a level of that kind of protection, but I don't want to see too much of it. Go ahead, Tabu. I'm sorry.
Well, not me either. Can I say one brief thing? Because I know I'm going to have to go. I've been on here
Absolutely.
A long time. But one thing I did want to say, you're talking about the immigrants coming, and when you talk about the American blacks, we have been here all along. We are a mixture of people. We are that pluribus unum. We're the mixture of the native, the African, and the white. But much of our ancestry were native and have been here all along. So, I mean, when we talk about that, let's get clear, let's get clear who the American black is.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
You know what? I would only say to you that this is a typical strategy, is to pit people against each other. And when in terms of a political strategy, what's going on in our government, and I hate to see that. And it's true, African-Americans have not only the same right, but in some senses have a greater right, because they've been here next to Native Americans. They've been here among the longest.
Well, we are part. They are part of our ancestors.
Yes,
when
they are.
When you say American blacks, we part Native as well. People seem to not understand that.
You know, it's interesting, Tibby, because I was down in Douglas. They had this celebration, Douglas Days, and my dad was next mayor, so they had a parade for all the mayors and stuff. But, you know, part of a group of gentlemen who visited were the guys who represent the Buffalo Soldier. And these were, you know, African-Americans who played a huge role in the Indian and Civil War out here in the Southwest, and they have an incredible, just unbelievably interesting heritage and history. And I bought this. They had this deck of cards that was giving all the things that the African Americans have done to make this such a great country. And it was so interesting to see them there. And they were dressed in their, you know, the civil their Civil War kind of uniform, and it was just a really nice thing to see.
Well, and the only thing I would add to that, the only thing I would add to that, that as long as we can discriminate against African Americans, that seems to me to be the factor that we really need to look at, because there's a tremendous achievement gap, and I know that Taboo knows this, especially here in Washington. There's a tremendous achievement gap between blacks and whites, especially in education, and that to me seems to be something that we need to focus on. That as long as we use race, regardless of the fact that we may, and hopefully someday it will not be a big issue because we'll all be approximately the same color and we'll all be part this and part that, but as long as we can use it as a factor to discriminate against people, we need to focus on it, I think. And I think that we've seen that in America, and we're still seeing it today. We're seeing it with women. We're seeing it with African Americans. We're seeing it with Hispanics. The unemployment for all these groups is higher. Education achievement for all these groups is higher, too. So I don't want to make it sound like I don't understand what you're saying. I absolutely do. But
no, I know
what's
you do,
relevant
but
to me is that we discriminate on these on the basis of this.
Right. But
thank
when
you,
Taboo.
I'm sorry. You could call us back, you know.
Yes.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to go. We're going to go to a break and play a song. Thank you, Taboo, for calling in. You're one of our most loyal listeners, and we really appreciate it. And your input is always so right on.
Yes,
so thank you. Thank you so much. But we're now going to take a short break so I can change the locks in case Kathleen's coming to Washington. And we're going to listen to a song which I chose this week. I got to choose this the song, Kathleen. So say goodbye to Echo and the Bunny Man. Here's Huey Lewis. We'll be back in a minute. All right. Well, don't become a medical coder, Kathleen Gomez. We were talking about that on the break, things you should do. Before we move on, you know, part of the reason that we have this show is that we want to spread the word about the fact that the people of the District of Columbia don't have the same rights as everybody else. And so we try to give an update every week on what's going on in the district. And the most recent thing is that Wednesday of this week, a federal judge said that he had reservations about a referendum passed to give D.C. budget autonomy. As you know, Kathleen, we don't have
yes.
control of our own budget. And so the people of the District of Columbia passed a referendum overwhelmingly. 89% of us voted that we should have control of our own budget. And the congressional, not the Congressional Budget Office, but the people that do research for Congress said that it's illegal, that we can't have our own budget autonomy because you know, the Constitution says that Congress has complete control of the district. So the mayor of the District of Columbia and the attorney general have said, yeah, they agree with the federal government assessment that this is illegal. And so the city council, in a really strange move, sued the mayor, brought the mayor into court.
Now, is this said, your new mayor or your old mayor?
Our old mayor.
Okay.
And said, we don't have the new mayor yet till November. But they said, yeah, he's wrong. We want the court to say that this is legal. And although the decision won't actually be handed down to this till this week, Judge Sullivan said, Federal Judge Sullivan said last week, look, this is not something that the courts can get involved in, and it's not something that the courts can resolve. They're not making the issue that that it is or is not illegal. They're saying it's just not the province of the court because the Constitution gives the power to Congress. And we know what Congress is going to do because they always do the same thing. They rule against the district.
But let me ask you an important question. I just don't get it. In the Constitution, one of the bases that I think every, even now, people, kids mostly know this, this is part of history and part of our basis for our country, is that you don't have taxation without representation. So if they say it's illegal for you guys to be able to control the money they tax you, then maybe you shouldn't pay taxes.
Well, you know what? If we could do that, we probably would. But one of the problems with not paying taxes, besides the fact that they can take your house and everything you own and throw you in jail, is that most people do not actually pay their own taxes. If you work for somebody, they pay taxes.
That's right. That's true.
They withhold. So it's really hard to do as an individual. I mean, if you're a doctor or a lawyer or somebody pays your own
property
taxes.
What about your property, right? Is you pay a high property tax.
Yeah, but we pay that to the local government. We don't pay that to the federal government. The local government's all behind us having the same rights as everybody else, but unfortunately, not the federal government. But moving on, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about minimum wage, but maybe we'll save that till next week because there's a bigger issue here that I want to talk about, which is really tied into what we've been talking about today, and that is that 50 years ago this week, President Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat, I want to point out, gave a speech, a commencement speech at the University of Michigan. John F. Kennedy had been asked to be the commencement speaker, and unfortunately, as we all know, 6 months prior to the graduation, he was assassinated. So Johnson, who was the new president at the time, showed up at the commencement and gave a speech where he said, "The challenge of the next half century is whether we have the wisdom to use our wealth to enrich and elevate our national life and to advance the quality of our American civilization." And the president said that your imagination and your initiative and your indignation will determine whether we build a society where progress is the servant of our needs or our society where old values and new visions are buried under unbridled growth. And you know what? The Great Society started with that, and we ended up creating programs like the War on Poverty, Civil Rights Protections, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, urban renewal, the first broad federal investment in elementary and high school education, Head Start, college aid, all these things, many of which are still with us and help build not only a great society, but a great economy. And now people want to back off from that.
It's very interesting because, you know, when I go back to Douglas and say I go to the county fair, that was built, you know, there's this wall that was built out of rock. Well, that was part of the WPA. You know, there's several national parks in that part of the state that were built by the WPA. I mean, so many public, you know, parks and that type of thing was built, and roads and bridges and schools. And I think that, you know, I was listening to Fox and they were going on and on about, you know, the $1 billion that we used to try, you know, to repair our highways and roads. And I think everyone agrees that the roads and our highway system is definitely, you know, not at its best. But they were talking about privatizing that. You know, and then I had a discussion where we were talking, well, you know, toll roads are pretty good. And you go to Oklahoma, they have some of the best roads. It's all tolls. Right. You know, do we go that way? You know, there's got to be some big decisions and big discussions. And it takes Americans, everyday Americans, to get involved in the process. Don't let these decisions be made while you're watching your Xbox or Netflix or whatever it is. Get involved. You have to. I mean, I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm amazed how few people know what's going on. This is your money. This is your future. It's your children's future. You have to get involved. And we've gotten to this point where everyone just wants to stick their heads in the sand, thinking that something's going to happen, or we're either going to, the world's going to end, or somehow it'll all blow over us. Well, it's going to bury us. So we, I don't know. Please, America, wake up and call in and tell us what you think.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I do is that I help train candidates, Native American candidates, actually. I did in the past. Unfortunately, the program has been discontinued. But one of the things that we always say to people is that if you don't have a seat at the table, you don't have a voice. Nobody hears you. Nobody knows what your concerns are. And actually, if you don't have a seat at the table, you may find yourself on the menu. Because, you know, they very often serve up people that don't show up. But,
that's right.
You know, just to show you and just to show you what you can do if you get involved, staying on the subject for a second of the Great Society. You know, Kathleen talked about the WPA, which came during the Depression. And that was the basis of the Great Society, is that Johnson's big hero in life, the person that he most admired, was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And, you know, but the difference between Roosevelt and Johnson was that Roosevelt was trying to save the country from in the middle of a depression. And Johnson was trying to take a country that was well off and get it to expend money on the future. And, you know, I think we need to fall somewhere in between, because certainly we're not in the same economic position that we were in the 60s, but we're also not in the same economic position that we were in the 30s and 40s. So we can make some investment, and we can work together from January 1965 to January 1967. The United States Congress passed 200 major bills. Compare that to what's going on today.
Bills have they passed? Do you know?
I need to research that. But I mean, what major bills have they passed? They've
Nothing.
Been stonewalled on all of them. Education, immigration, so on and so forth. Well, I see that Kathleen's passionate plea to America has brought in a caller. Lynn is on line one, so let's see what Lynn has to say. Lynn, are you there?
Yes, hello, you guys.
Hello.
I just was wondering when we're going to pass and really get creative in this country and move it forward into the future, where we actually have a whole series of community servicemen and servicewomen jobs opened up, and they have all the green jobs for solar and wind and, you know, hydroponics and edible landscaper troops and, you know, all the healing arts that are out there for the body, mind, spirit healers and for alternative healing, you know, centers in every single community, and the light workers and the virtual local and global programs that can be integrated, and have everyone be paid for all these animal healer work and, you know, everything, the recycling that has to be done and all the cleanup and infrastructures. And I mean, there's just so many jobs that are needed, and just
yes.
start them out at $2,600 per month right off the bat, and sign up every community and have a list of all the services. Go beyond the nonprofits, go beyond, you know, the old economic structures, and move us into, you know, the new paradigm. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, first of all, this is one of the downsides of democracy, you know, is that to get those kind of things to happen, you need to be able to put pressure on the government. And the only way you can do that is to organize people and get them motivated. As long as the AMA is the lobbyists that spend millions and millions and millions of dollars along with the drug companies to keep you on drugs rather than to obtain alternative healing, you know, alternative. When I grew up, one of my best friend's father owned a homeopathic pharmacy, and it was wildly popular in the area. I'm sure it's still here. But, you know, but it was one one in the whole Washington area. You know, so until we can get people motivated to make these issues, issues that politicians care about, that's never going to happen. And so we need to get people out there, Lynn, to call their congressmen, to call their senators, to make sure that, you know, these things do get a proper airing and they do get the kind of funding that you're talking about. And until that happens, I can't see any of that happening.
But we do have, I just wanted to put out to everybody, we do have www.freeandequalelections.org. Marion Williamson, Dennis Kucinich, and a lot of others are on board. They're going to the colleges, too, and so that we can start networking. I work with some different Occupy groups, and there's a global climate change convergence. I mean, there's some really incredible people on board. I mean, so that we really can bring this into, you know, to fruition.
And I would say this,
that website, I'm sorry, yeah, give that website one more time.
www.freeandequalelections.org, so that we actually take over the government for the people, by the people. It's sort of the populism that Elizabeth Warren is talking about, too. And I've talked with Bernie Sanders about it, too, and Tom Hartman. So, yeah.
Well, you know what, Lynn, I do feel more optimistic because what I'm seeing is with more and more families facing these incredible allergies that their children have. I mean, I never had, I was talking to some friends, you know, did you ever remember somebody dying if you opened up a bag of peanuts? You know, No, we, and, you know, all these allergies, people are, young kids are so extremely sick and they're being born sick. I think that there is somewhat of a movement, a critical mass, because as our food is getting genetically modified, as our water is getting, you know, the quality of our water is getting destroyed, I think people are finally seeing that each generation seems to be getting sicker and having more diseases and problems, that something is going to have to be done. Because if you want to be really selfish, you're looking at your young kid and you're realizing, Is he going to be able to live? I mean, can you imagine? Some of these allergies are just unbelievable. So I do think that that's going to happen, but I think that people's got to start getting involved. Hopefully they'll go and look at your site. And if it's, you know, even for those people who this is too progressive, do whatever it takes or whatever it is you feel that you're comfortable, at least get involved. Because any small movement is better than no movement at all.
You know, and unfortunately, Lynn, I think history teaches us, first of all, this is the province of government, I believe, to push these things, to push for the future. Green technologies, for example, something we absolutely have to do. And it's not only good for the country, it's good for the economy, because the rest of the world's polluted as well. So we can export these technologies. So it's a really, really positive thing. But unfortunately, when we look at some of the things that have happened in American history, like the Triangle Shirt Fire, which you may be familiar with, where laws for workers were reformed only after several hundred young women, some of them as young as 10 and 12 years old, were killed in a fire in New York City at a shirt factory where they chained all the doors shut, you know, and that led to regulations, or the FDA being created because there were so many kids at the turn of the century that were addicted to opiates that their parents gave them. Teething syrups had opium in them, and you know, the FDA didn't come along until there was a crisis. So I hope it doesn't take a crisis like some disease that kills 300,000 people, which is resistant to all the drugs we have because we've been pumping them into people for so long. I hope it doesn't take something like that to make it happen. But the pressure's got to come from us to make it happen. And we want to thank you for calling in, Lynn. I know you've called in before, and we appreciate you listening, and we certainly appreciate your input. It's always great to hear from you.
You're very positive. I like her because she's very, very positive. She's got that. She has not gotten, I guess not defeated, but what's the word when you just don't, you're not a pessimist, but you kind of gotten old and you're wondering if anything really works. There's a
well,
word
we
for that.
Need, you know what, Kathleen? We need something positive because you've ruined my whole day by telling me that all my children are going to move back in with me. I'm just thinking like I'm going to get rid of them. And now I realize you're going to be here till they're 40 years old.
And I'm going to come and live
terrible.
With you.
And you're going to come live with me. There's not going to be any room for me. But let me tell you, by the way, go to that website and check it out, the one that Lynn gave you. I saw Dennis Kucinich just last week. Pat and I ran into him at Eastern Market, Kathleen, and we sat there and talked to him. And he's a very progressive guy, and he's a great guy. Congressman from Cleveland. But anyway, we're just about out of time, Kathleen. So I'm
going to
give you the last word. Go ahead.
Give me the last word. Well, listen, if there's anything, and I'm always saying this, I'm always on my soapbox, please get involved, whether it's your school board. Listen, there are so many issues with Common Core. You know, it's amazing. If you want to get involved in your county or your city, just please, please get involved. Take one night out of the month and go to one of these meetings. Right. I tell you, bring a friend. You got to start getting involved in people who are making decisions on how your money's spent and where it's spent, because believe me, if you don't keep dabs on these people, they will feel like they know better than you. Before you know it, your power is gone. So don't let it go. And I have such great hope for the United States. We are an incredible country with incredible people. We just have to get our stuff together and stop being a little bit lazy. So, listen to us, and hopefully we motivate you enough and give you ideas in which to get involved.
Well, I can't say it any better than that. So goodbye, America. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.